with Ella, Ella Panizia, and she is coming also from St. Petersburg, from the European University, and Ella's background is in zootology. So she is actually at the moment visiting our institute for 2 weeks, and we continue discussing next Tuesday with her from Russian law, but now the floor is yours.
What I'm going to talk about is based on an ongoing project by the Institute of Modern World Law at the European University of St. Petersburg, and Kirill is also part of this project. It's called Trajectory of Criminal Case. And what we're trying to find out is how the criminal case is processed through different bureaucracies within different enforcement agencies and prosecutor bodies and the courts. And by studying these procedures and practices and how they work on the ground level for the real people, we're trying to find out how the criminal justice system in Russia actually works and why the outcomes are so weird and what they can do about it. So this presentation is about the inequality. And of course there are lots of inequalities in Russian criminal justice system, both in terms of who is prosecuted and who is not, and who goes to jail and who just receives other sort of punishment, and so on and so forth. And normally we think that inequality works through bias. People prefer, like, giving privilege to the light, to those they see as superior, and underprivileged and discriminate people they are biased against. What we probably see in the functioning of Russian criminal justice system is a very different mechanism of bias, a very different mechanism that is based on bureaucratic sorting and picking. Who is the easiest target to prosecution? Who is the worthy person to defend by using criminal justice system against people who violate their rights? And who has a right, who has an access, who has enough resources to access actual due process? And who is vulnerable enough to be processed in terms of efficacy, of bureaucratic efficacy, of saving the labor and saving the risks for the agents involved rather than based on their rights. So, we all know that the Russian criminal justice system has a conviction bias, so sociologists usually use the word accusation bias. Once you are made a defendant, you probably will be accused of something. Doesn't mean you go to jail, doesn't mean you even get convicted, but you will not be acquitted. In some one form or another, even if you are dismissed, you are dismissed with prejudice. Russian courts process about 1 million criminal, little more than 1 million criminal cases a year. So you are not going to hear from me about Kusiraev, Khodorkovsky case, Magnitsky case. All these are outliers, and I am trying to talk about general facts, which is very different. So some other interesting statistical facts that are less emphasized than conviction bias. About many cases, about 25% of cases and 40% in some categories, are dismissed by courts with prejudice, for nearly rehabilitation of stayers. Most of them are примирение с потерпевшим, deal with the victim. The problem is, not all the cases have the victim. A lot of crimes that are prosecuted are victimless crimes. Not all the cases are available for this solution because it's only available for less severe charges. So, the bigger the charge, the more probations judges grant. The more severe the charge, the worst thing you are accused of, you found guilty, your chance to get probation instead of going to jail is higher, not lower. Isn't it a real battle for some research projects? And of course, no building controls for human rights violation, lots of illegal evidence. You cannot believe how much evidence is fake, very low quality of evidence, and every time we have a big open process for the cost of administrative case, I promise not to mention it, but now I'm doing this. We see lots of evidence fake, lots of rules broken, and we are like, what they are insane, they don't know that this is a public event and every little thing will be under scrutiny. Actually, this is how the system functions overall. If you look at a typical case with no big lawyers, you will see about the same quality of evidence. They cannot produce it. Just a couple of words about how this system functions. This is the trajectory of a criminal case. Most of the criminal cases, typically, are registered at the police station on the sub-district level. You have police of Russian Federation, police of the region, subject of federation, police of district, and then you have police precincts and police stations of like 50 people in big cities working there. And there you have different actors who might be registering the case, depending on the nature of the case. Might be dispatchers, might be part of the street patrol, field detectives themselves, so that the people who would later investigate the case. Anyway, they are employees from the same police station where the field detectives who would do preliminary inquiry into the case, they have the same boss and they have the same reporting system. So they report on their performance. And their performance is based on quotas and on the number of cases solved. The registration process and the everyday function of police is under, like formally under, some supervision from prosecutor's office, but no prosecutor is responsible for the case at the time it is processed through the police station. Preliminary inquiry is when they try to figure out who did this, and they bring the person in, they have several hours to question them, they collect preliminary evidence, and that's where all the bad stuff happens. Torture, faking, like blatant faking of the evidence. This is happening before the case opened against certain person. The process of opening the case, like not in general, but against a certain person, is, well, first, investigator agrees to take the case. The prosecutor is either informed or asked to okay it, depending on the nature of the case. I'm not going into details. Now, the investigator, who will be an in-door person to put the paperwork together, is part of a very different unit. For severe cases, he would be part of a completely different organization of CSN, investigative committee, which is a federal agency, different from Ministry of Internal Affairs, their ministers. For minor cases, they are part of separate investigative units within Ministry of Internal Affairs, but organizationally divided from the police stations where registration and field detective goes. At that point, we have one specific person in the prosecutor's office who is supervising this exact case. This person is being a supervisor for this case until the case is considered solved, a vignette of Lucienia, the final protocol is okay, and this person would be the one who okays this a vignette of Lucienia, the protocol of one person.
Indictment.
Then, inside the prosecutor's office, the prosecutor himself, the regional prosecutor, will give this case to another aide of him, the owner, so him, who will be the prosecution representative in the court. It's always a different person. There is a huge amount of specialization within the prosecutor. It's not written in the law, it's just the question of internal bureaucratic efficiency, but that's how it works. Now, this person will go in court and defend the case and try to put the case through the court so to win the case. This person has no say in should we open this case, how we'll charge, how we'll prosecute, what's going on during the investigation and prosecution, this person just gets the same branch of papers as is sent to the court at this time. So, and then we have the judge and what's supposed to be litigation. Within enforcement authorities involved, so it's police, investigative unit, and prosecutors. They have very similar organizations. They're all highly centralized federal bureaucracies with lack of external controls and feedback from any external force, not only society, human rights organizations, but also civil authorities. They answer to the president, not even to the prime minister. And for example, a police officer, field detective, and an investigator from Следственный комитет, from the investigative committee, working at the same case, the nearest common boss would be the president of the country. So, how much communication they can do officially, you might derive from this. They have quantitative reporting and evaluation system that is organized in a way that leads to constantly growing case load. You need to solve more cases than the previous period. They also have a recording / inspection system. Like once something is recorded, it's open for inspection forever, it can be like checked in 5 years. And the number of recording items per case for all of them is constantly growing. Because there is no other way to evaluate what they do. You cannot actually access performance of the police. You just want to make sure that they do enough and they put everything down, and if you check them later everything is fine on paper, so it's not your guilt if they fail to record the fact that the patient was tortured. Okay? So, also recruiting through CAP patients with very easy dismissal routines. It's very easy to dismiss an officer. they always pick their own. And your closure is probably is already obvious from what I've already said. So, they are evaluated by statistical quotas of cases present. And punished for failure. Punished for failure to process, or if the case is if the case fails further through the chain. Now, if the defendant is acquitted by court, the field detective who started the process will be punished. So, what incentive would this bureaucratic structure create for the officers? Picking easy cases and trying to push out the cases that are hard to solve. Cutting the angles, of course, huge time pressures because they are overloaded. You understand why? Pushing decisions to earlier stages of case processing. Because if I can first actually investigate the case, make sure that I have the guilty person before I start with the formalities, nothing happens on paper, I can avoid responsibility first. I can avoid contacting the person who can fail my case, but not allowing it to be processed out of my division to the next stage. Second, so I want to first check and then record. Threat is first check, second, bargain with the next person in the chain, and third, report. They're taking documentation to evade inspection risks and save time, much more than they do to actually frame someone because they want, you know, to punish an innocent person. So faking documentation is part of the routine of processing, like real cases, of processing the cases of people who, all the officers involved are sure are guilty. So faking evidence for Khodorkovsky is very easy. So that's what they do. They always fake. Also, it means that the fact that every document in the criminal file is fake doesn't mean the person is not guilty. That's just the way of operation. Yes, and then they, of course, develop social techniques of pushing the case through the process chain. What is this register? Why? What I have on hand? I need some means to make sure that the next person in the chain, for example, the prosecutor, would agree to take it, get it to court. The problem is, in this process, if we go back to this picture, there are several organizational boundaries the case needs to cross. What happens, and not less important, what is not happening on these boundaries? First, covering registration with preliminary investigation means that you can pick easy cases, and we have lots of latency, of course, lots of unregistered crime, and sometimes it comes to like really pushing the victim not to report the crime. It sometimes comes to violence against victims, like literary violence, and lots of problems. But sometimes it's literary violence or making the victim a defendant in other case just in order to shut them up. Second, defining detective. Field detective and investigator, they actually detective. They are people who are supposed to solve the case. They have to work together. Actually, they have a conflict of interest, which is always, of course, solved at the expense of the only person who is not part of ongoing working relationship, the detective. Also, it means that if a field detective is accused of, for example, torture or some medical behavior, his case, due to regional regional division of responsibility within the authorities, the investigator who has this case would be the same guy who is regularly working with this steel detector. So that's one of the answers why the torture cases are not actually properly investigated in Russia. Third thing, divide of responsibility within prosecution. Prosecution is supposed to supervise the case and then present it to court. And why prosecution is interested in supervising the case, making sure that everything is going on by the books, is because I'm a prosecutor, I am going to judge with this case. I want it investigated properly, investigated fully, and without breaking the law, right? Now we have two groups of people within the same authority, one of which is like holding the labor and fulfilling his obligations to supervise the case in a very formalistic way, and then another one who is interested in this case being like legal. Just have no say in it, yet has this file from his superiors and needs to go to the court and do whatever he needs to do to push it from the court. Then, because of this, the prosecutor has to form alliances with the criminal judge. There is the same amount of specialization in courts as in the prosecution, and as like the same guy would be representing the prosecution, and the same guy would be the judge on this sort of criminal cases. Normally, of course. Normally, it's not like 100%, it's a huge oversimplification, but that's the ideal in the eyes of the prosecution. So what do they do? First, they form an ongoing relationship, because again, territorially, they are responsible for the same area, plus specialization, they are responsible for the same type of cases, plus they try to send the same aid to prosecutor to the same judge on and on again. Second, the judges are afraid of their decisions being overturned, and the prosecution are much weight more active in filing complaints about judges' decisions than any private people are. And with all this situation, the judge is not the person who hears the case and compares the positions of two parties. Instead, the judge is the person who is the last evaluator of this criminal file, not case, the criminal file of papers presented to him or her by the prosecution. Maybe I don't need this audience to go very far into the idea that judges are work in the same structural conditions as enforcers. They actually are subject to bureaucratic accountability. They work within hierarchy. They are subject to practically the same type of evaluation, although it's organized very differently. They are afraid of the decisions overturned. They have to fit into time constraints, and the fulfilling the time constraints is much more important for them than being like really making considered decisions. So, what happens to people who become defendants? Who this system would sort out? Of course, resources, people who can who can struggle for like their freedom and their name. People who can mobilize, of course, state representation, social interests, and people who are critical both configuration of social networks. People who can bring in you don't know who. For example, we intellectuals are usually not target of non-political prosecution, exactly to say for this reason, because we have a voice. And no one knows, you know, you might be somewhere in Siberia and not wealthy, and the university professor is not a big guy in this sort of city. But wow, you have like 1,000 readers on Facebook and trying to prosecute you, like the another Magnitsky case. And who is sorted in when there is a need to fulfill quotas? Of course, poor people, homogeneous social networks, any majority, whoever majority is in the area, is much preferred to ethnic minority because their social networks are more predictable, more homogeneous, they're all alike, it's unlikely that they bring some extra protection in. Stigmatized, no one was trying to graduate. Addicts, migrants, some ethnic minorities. You see, ethnic minorities have a twofold position here. Or those who create extra incentives to prosecute. Political pull, bribe, available forever. And from here, you can see why the entrepreneurs are so vulnerable. Yes, they are resourceful, yes, they are sometimes able to mobilize protection. But they're also stigmatized. And they're the only people with private, non-state protected wealth who are available for renting. Most of the people, it's not that much possibilities for corruption as everyone thinks in typical criminal cases in Russia. Because poor are the rule, there's no one to bribe. So the entrepreneurs are a very rare exclusion from this rule. Last slide. What's really interesting is how the privilege looks. With good as you know, like the journalistic point of view, if you have someone privileged, state official, really wealthy person, someone relative, we will have, you know, evidence disappearing, witnesses undergo some, you know, someone trying to track them, and so forth and so on. Nothing like this. But in general, nothing like this. On the preliminary inquiry, you cannot torture a person of high status because if you torture them, you cannot then let them out. But the detectives have no qualification to do it in a proper manner. They are part of assembly line, working very quickly and very efficiently if no one intervenes on this concealed, you know, taking of the evidence against the persons who are guilty. So the paperwork is bad from the very beginning. And detective errors are reported because privileged usually have access to professional level advice. Then, investigation, you have the investigators who are also part of, of an assembly line of conveyor belt. And they get not enough evidence from preliminary stage of investigation. And they, again, cannot apply much legal pressure. So what they do, they fail.